If the General Assembly were a boxing event, and sometimes it seems as if it is, we'd still be making our way through a very long undercard. Better hit the concession stand soon, though, because the much-hyped main event is fast approaching, and it promises to be a slugfest. I'm referring, of course, to final negotiations over the state's two-year budget, that high-stakes bout when not two but three figurative heavyweights enter the ring. That's the House-passed budget, the Senate's fiscal plan, and the spending priorities of the governor, who, despite a shared party affiliation with the supermajorities in both chambers, will have to score a 12th-round knockout to get everything he wants. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll preview the Thunder in the Rotunda, probably better known as the biennial budget showdown. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Back in February, on a party line vote, the Indiana House passed a two-year $43.3 billion budget that, among other things, prioritized education, economic development, and tax relief. Now, the Senate has yet to specify the changes that it would like to see, but the chamber's leaders have signaled a wariness about some elements of the House plan. The debate is sure to ratchet up in the coming days, especially once lawmakers get a revised revenue forecast. Joining me to talk dollars and cents are Republican Representative Jeff Thompson of Lewiston, chairman of the Budget Writing House Ways and Means Committee, Democratic Representative Gregory Porter of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of that committee, Republican Senator Chris Garten of Charlestown, the chamber's majority floor leader and a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and Democratic Senator Fadi Kudora of Indianapolis, ranking minority member of the Senate Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee and a member of the Appropriations Committee. You guys are busy, all these committees. I don't know how you even have time to come and to have this discussion, but I do appreciate your time. Since the budget starts in the House, we'll start this question with the House. Jeff Thompson, now you've been in the General Assembly for more than two decades, but this is your first session as chairman of the Budget Writing House Ways and Means Committee. Do you wish you hadn't taken the call when you were offered the job, or is it?
No, I'm glad I did. Glad I did.
And after the your maiden voyage and the bill passed out of the House on a party line vote, where it's now before the Senate, but the word you said, you told reporters afterward how you described the budget in a word, you said opportunity. Elaborate on that, if you would.
Well, opportunity for Hoosiers to live in a state that is fiscally responsible in the sense that we have adequate reserves and we spend our tax dollars wisely. And opportunity to spend more of the money themselves and not to the government by a tax reduction. And opportunity for parents to find and make the best choice for their children to attend the school they would like them to see attend.
We've given a good foreshadowing about some of the specifics we're going to get into. I like this. You can have this job if you want. Greg Porter, what's wrong with that? Do you think opportunity is the word you use, or would you characterize it in a different word? A different word.
When we did the budget, I came back with was missed opportunities, and the reason why, from the Democrat perspective, why it's missed opportunities was because we did not expand pre-K education. We did not really look at more of a human infrastructure that we needed within our state. And so we were very concerned that even though they feel like it was a good budget in regards to education, but it was kind of being skewed toward another segment of our population.
You're talking as if it's already a fait accompli. You haven't even had a chance to weigh in conference yet. But
We are very excited about weighing in the conference, but we're going to stick to our goals and our objectives as an organization.
One missed opportunity. What's the biggest? If you said this thing is a missed opportunity because, now you've mentioned a couple of general things, what's the one thing that you would say, Representative Thompson, this should have been in there? You're hurting the Hoosiers.
Well, Representative Thompson and I talked about it. It was about education, early education, and about higher ed. And what's going on with higher education here. We did not fund it as we gave more money, but not like the way we should have.
Well, there is a change in how it proposed
right.
The funding, and we were going to get on that too. So, Senator Garten.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your take? Now, we have two options on the table here.
Yeah.
Opportunity, missed opportunity. Yeah. You going to pick one of those or another one?
Well, to be fair,
off the board and pick a
I think
option.
We've got 150 options and
least,
opportunities.
Yeah. Well, and let's add one for the governor, too.
That's right.
So we'll have 151 at least.
That's exactly right. You know, I think what you can expect to see from the Senate Republican budget is very simple. I think you're going to see record investments in really the future of Indiana and future opportunities in the form of education investment, in the form of economic development investment, and in the form of record investments in mental health. And so that's something I couldn't be more proud of. And these are continuing conversations, as you well know. That's the season we're in the General Assembly right now, and couldn't be more excited.
We could all, take a nap until the 19th of this month when the forecast comes out, when things get really exciting. Right. Hadi Kudura, again, where do you fall on this? I mean, do you feel good about this budget? Can you go to your constituents and say we did right by you? Or
just like every budget, there are many great opportunities that we can work on in a bipartisan fashion, in a fiscally responsible way, to advance the interests of Hoosiers across the state. I think we can do more within the current parameters of the budget to improve the quality of life for Hoosiers. There are many things that can get behind in the budget, but they did not go as far as I would like to see us making these investments. For example, the House budget did not include funding for Senate Bill 1, which is the primary priority for the Senate, investing in mental health. We did not go as far enough investing in public health, which is critical, and we rank in the bottom five nationwide on public health metrics. And then education, we have an opportunity to rewire and rededicate some of these dollars to really lift up over 1 million students in the state.
Well, that's a good jumping off point to talk about education. That is essentially half of the budget, biggest slice of the budgetary pie. You just talked about this, Jeff Thompson, the notion of not only an increase, but perhaps an increase in a way that extends choice to other families. Now, that's arguably the most controversial part of this. Yeah, $2 billion, theoretically more, 11%, I guess, is the figure, which would be historic.
Right.
But then, is it really that? Or because when you start looking, but schools would have to do this, schools would have to do that, A, is it as significant? Is it truly historic? Let's start there.
And yes, I believe it is. The number of sheer dollars for education. And we still continue to fund public schools at the highest amount of any students. And that's the key mindset, that we fund students and not institutions. And if every parent decides that they want their child, son or daughter, to go to a public school, so be that. If they want to attend a private school, so be that. But let parents be the one to decide that. And again, the most dollars ever going into education.
And your budget, as written, would really take to heart, I guess, the notion of money following the student, because not just the instructional dollars, but you would have a $1,500 payment for non-instructional expenses that a school district might incur, which sounds good, I guess, but for some school districts that might actually represent a cut.
Well, it's $1,400 and $1,500 is the floor. And as I said on the House floor, we have a $5,000 gap between the high and low in the property tax side of operations. And that's a pretty significant gap to have that much difference among on a per student basis. And we need to look at that. I know some of the opposite parties on board with that line of thinking. There are some issues in some of our urban schools particularly, and some inequality, if you will, with regard to that.
Well, and it would be a cut for your school in your district.
Absolutely. I mean, it would be definitely a cut within our school district. I understand, and people, he's been chair of Ways and Means, but he's done the formula for a number of years. He's been on subcommittee, so when it comes to education.
You saying he's sandbagging with this rookie stuff?
Yeah, right. He's not that much of a rookie. But when it came to what their budget was for urban schools or other school corporations, there was a gap. And, I mean, it was barely above inflation rates. That's if you qualify for it. So, you know, when we look at urban schools and other school corporations, it's very important that, you know, we have to educate all children. Other institutions, as in, you know, charters and whoever, they, you know, you get a chance to be chosen. So with the voucher movement of over 400% more, you know, that is very problematic for us. Because you know we understand about the money following a child, and if you understand, if you've been around, that's been an action step for the last 7 to 8 years. Money following a child, and now
More than that, 2011. We just talked about that a few weeks ago on the show, where it started out as a pilot program with 7,500 vouchers, and it was tied into the experience one would have in public school or bad experience that would trigger the opportunity, and that has evolved and changed. This opens it up essentially to everybody,
And then another point that's very problematic for us is that the virtual schools, I mean, funding them at 100%. You know, they're not bricks and mortar. I mean, so, but we're going to fund them at 100%. So I'm trusting, you know, the Senate to make it better. And
let's see what the Senate says.
I'll point it to him right now.
Because there is this historic increase of this $200 billion. So one-third of that potentially would be going to the voucher program.
Yeah,
and you could calculate it. So there's a potentially 11% increase here. Somebody's done the math. It's 70% if you want to frame it in that context.
Sure.
That private schools are getting an even bigger hit.
Well, I'd like to start by thanking Representative Porter for trusting the Senate on record.
That's right. So I have an affidavit here.
Let's move forward from there. Yeah. But you know, to education, there's just a couple things that I would point out. You know, Indiana, in terms of percent of overall budget, is third highest in the nation in terms of dollars invested in education. That's something I couldn't be more proud of. The other thing that I think we need to recognize and acknowledge is that these voucher families always also pay property taxes. And so their dollars are still going to fund public education. And I think that's a point that we miss in this conversation a lot. But to Representative Thompson's point, the continued record investments in education here in Indiana is something I couldn't be more proud of. And it goes right to what I spoke about at the start of those record future opportunistic investments in the state and in our really tomorrow's leaders.
It doesn't sound like you're throwing Greg Porter the bone he was hoping for. Are you comfortable with the threshold, the spending that has been proposed for vouchers as it stands now?
So that's an ongoing conversation in our caucus right now. Certainly we've got 50 members with 50 different views, 40 of which are Republicans. That's a complex conversation.
Including Chairman of Appropriations, who's on record saying he thinks that there's not enough supervision or accountability for some of these private schools.
So. Yeah, and Senator Mishler has spoken out on that, and I think if Senator Mishler were here today, and we'll be careful not to speak for him.
He's still in timeout.
But he would, he would be quick to recognize that's going to be a caucus conversation. And I think he has said, you know, he's one of 40 members, and he's certainly open to those conversations. And that's exactly where we're at right now.
Fadi Gidor, again, the notion of choice. Everybody, I mean, it sounds good in theory. What's the problem?
I fully support parent choice. The decision has to be made by the parents in the best interest of their children. My issue is with the state choice of funding, not with parental choice. And the issue that I have with the state choice of funding is the inconsistency of the policies that we have. So, for example, the 400% increase of the vouchers based on free and reduced lunch.
Actually, 300 now, it would go up.
But it actually, the public doesn't fully recognize that 400% increase based on free and reduced lunch actually equates to 742% increase of the FPL, the federal poverty line, which is about $220,000 plus for a family in Indiana. So the issue is that we're having, we're trying to close the achievement gap. And when you look at the 1 million students in our public schools, almost 48 to 50% of these students are minorities, students of color, English language learners, and special ed students. So if we are truly trying to lift up the state and make critical investments in the future of our state, we cannot have policies that support pre-K at 127% or $30,000. So in the eyes of the state, you are too wealthy if you make more than 127% to qualify for On My Way to Pre-K, but you are too poor if you make 400% of the free and reduced lunch to qualify for a voucher while you make up to $220,000 a family. These are the types of inconsistencies that I would hope that we on the Senate side can work on to resolve.
The follow what Fadi said is that since 2014, the complexity index in regards to how we fund
the students. English is a second language regarding disabilities.
It's dropped over 40%. So, I mean, so we have a gap there that, that it's dropped, but now we're doing something else with the voucher program.
Are you more concerned about vouchers or just about funding levels and the notion that, at least as the budget was written in the House, that textbooks, now the governor, of course, have called for an elimination of textbook fees that parents have historically paid, but instead of allocating money, it actually is basically sort of an artful transfer of responsibility, is it not?
To local schools. So the textbook tax,
which they say is cutting into increase in tuition support.
So, your question in regards to the textbook tax, yes, now it's going to the school corporations. Now they have to endure that paying that those dollars. But it's about the funding of students in general. as it grows. I mean, there are a lot more complications now in education that we need to really look at long term in regards to addressing the achievement gap that we have.
Is the notion that there's such an increase in tuition support that schools can theoretically absorb the textbooks? Is that the thinking?
Yes. We put the additional dollars that the governor had in his budget and put that right into the formula and added that on.
And Instead of saying, here's a separate line
and
for...
That way, let them be responsible for making the best purchase at the lowest price, because now, all of a sudden, it's going to be incumbent upon the school to make the wisest choice in terms of price. Back to some of the things. And again, money follows the child. And right now, we're funding traditional publics at about twice those that have the choice scholarship. It's about twice the dollars that we actually send, accounting property taxes, to public schools. And also the percent increase with regard to the complexity index and free and reduced lunch, of course, is included in that calculation. And also any other types of programs like that had a higher percent increase in a lot of cases than the actual foundation. So we're looking at those kind of things.
And I know supporters of the vouchers have said, I think you've been quoted as pointing out that 90% of students, Hoosier students, are in public schools.
Yes.
But I guess the question I'll ask Senator Garton this, if it becomes more attractive, as arguably it would, for a segment of the population that either didn't have access to those dollars, those scholarships before, or now the dollars are going to be flowing at a greater, a more equitable level vis-a-vis the public support. I mean, there'll be more equivalent based on what you know, as you just alluded to. How do you know it stays 90-10? What keeps it from going 50-50? Or we had Bob Boehning, who's the godfather, the architect of school reform, school choice here, who sort of smiles when he says it, but I think would be satisfied with if the shift were 100% private at some point. I mean, is that a long-term concern for your caucus and for you?
You know, it's certainly something that we're considering and discussing, and this is an issue that voters vote on. Specific back to the point on ELL, that's one of the things I want to highlight is we're looking at record investments in the ELL space in particular. If I recall, I think we're doubling the spend there. And I think that's everybody coalescing around the fact that Indiana's growing, right? We're doing a great job bringing families to Indiana and recognizing the diversity in our schools now and understanding that we've got to continue to invest in that space. And again, I think Chairman Thompson did a great job on that, and I think that's something that our caucus will likely support.
You know, we've so far talked about K through 12, and believe me, there are other issues besides education, but this is important. Let's talk university funding, though, too, because there is going to be additional, again, I'm saying also like you did, that it's already a done deal. The House budget does have additional dollars for Indiana's universities, but they essentially pushed aside a mechanism that the state school board had proposed in terms of performance-based funding, where if you meet this threshold, you get this and you get that. Is it good that there's more money, or are you disappointed that the formula, if you will, has been altered?
So I think universities are behind and supportive of the new performance mechanism. There were issues and concerns about moving some of the dollars in the House budget to the legacy part of the formula, which is the existing formula, more than the performance side. That's something we need to look at on the Senate side. But overall, I think if you look at the continuum of education between pre-K, K through 12, and higher ed, we must invest critically. If we wait for our students until they are in high school to help them transition into post-secondary education, that strategy did not work for the last 20 to 30 years. Evident by the drop in enrollment, college enrollment numbers, and high school graduation rates. Most research points out that we need to invest as early as possible in our children. That's why I'm very focused and supportive of any idea to expand access to high-quality early childhood education. It has a direct correlation with success in post-secondary education.
And I should correct myself. I will. About the performance-based formula, I said the state school board. It's actually the Commission on Higher Education. I'm not suggesting that the school board, they got enough trouble with K-12. Well, they don't need to worry about the others.
Yeah, and in regards to the performance, all universities, some win and some lose in that performance. And that's one thing that I think as we have to continue, as we have this debate and figure it out, there are going to be winners and losers within the university community.
If I could jump in here, I've spent a lot of time meeting with the majority of the university presidents. I've spent a lot of time with Commissioner Lowry, and I just want to say, if you haven't spent time with Chris Lowry yet, I would encourage you to. Him and his team are absolutely fantastic. And you know, they've really just...
good thing I corrected myself about the agency or the panel we're talking about here.
You know, they've sort of taken off and attacked this thing like a rocket ship. I think the challenge was when Commissioner Lowry stepped on board, it was late last year, and there just wasn't enough time, I think, to really tweak that formula and get it to where we needed it to be. And I think that was... indicative of what the House sent over, just to give them sort of a bridge to say, let's vet this a little longer. CHE's doing a lot of work there. I've spent a lot of time with those folks kind of vetting this. You know, certainly I think the House put in 4% and 6%, if I remember correctly. So there is an increase there, and I'm excited about partnering with Commissioner Lowry and his folks, but we just need more time to get it right.
In regards to that, you're right, Commissioner's only been around for a while. But we had Tax and Finance Policy, a summer study committee, that came back and had these recommendations, if you remember. And so he was saddled with what the recommendations was, tax and fiscal policy. And so, but I have had conversations with him. He's been very open. We had universities are playing catch up now.
One more education question before we move on to some other topics, if we don't run out of time. The Kinsey Institute, amendment was offered from the floor, I think unexpectedly, even to the House Speaker. The Kinsey Institute, human sexuality research, the suggestion that it is doing things it shouldn't have done or in the past was. And so at the budget as it stands now says no public dollars can go to the Kinsey Institute. Right. Is that the way you want it to see at the end?
Well, I think the Senate, of course, will act on that. But I believe that right now that a small percent of IU's dollars are actually state dollars, and they have the freedom to fund that if they want to. And
since it's not a line item,
it's not a line item. And what's happened in the past, well, I'm not sure, but you know, from what I've been told today, it has at least in the proper way today.
All right, mental health, human public health. Now, the commission that looked at this, that the governor appointed, had some big dollars that said that's what was necessary just to get Indiana up to par. The governor had gotten a little pushback. He reduced his ask. Now this budget reduces it further. Is it enough?
It is not enough. Public health has been underfunded for decades. And I feel that, you know, it's about the human infrastructure. If we don't fund public health at the level that it needs to be funded, we continue to have the disparities in regards to health care. Our health care costs go up. I mean, there's so much big debate now about hospital costs and things like that. So, but we have to invest now so that we can take care of our public health system throughout. I mean, everyone doesn't even have a public health officer. Every county doesn't have that.
I know there's less than a dollar spent in some counties and 88 in others.
Exactly. And when you talk about that, when you look at it holistically, you know, we're hurting until there's an epidemic or a breakout. Then all of a sudden everyone's looking glazed over like, what happened?
Oh, I want to ask you about that. But I also want to talk about tax cuts. I mean, the House budget expedites or accelerates a cut in the personal income tax, instead of the benefits accruing fully maturing at 2029, it would be 2026. Again, is that something that you guys are not, again, some in your caucus have said, it's maybe just...
Well, I wish I could tell you it's the first time I've got that question.
Well, I didn't say I was novel and new. I just, good question's a good question, I guess. Where does it land?
So I'm always quick to highlight Senator Holman Senate Bill 3, which sets up a blue ribbon tax force. And so what that is a two-year comprehensive review for the state of Indiana's tax structure, all things tax. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what that yields, because when we talk about long-term investments and we talk about long-term forecasting for the future of Hoosiers, we've got to have that data and we've got to have that information. Now, the here and now problem, and that's what we're discussing today, is the property taxes and, you know, I think record increases in assessments. And I'm quick to remind my constituents.
21% and the average bill is going to go up.
I'm quick to remind my constituents, those aren't state dollars. We don't get those dollars. You know, that is a local tax, and those go back to local municipalities and local units. And so I've simply asked my constituents, engage your local elected officials and ask them, what services are you getting for those increased tax hikes? And I think it's a fair question.
Well, Father Cador, you know, there's so many competing interests here. We have some folks saying raise, put a $2, you know, tax increase on cigarettes. Let's do that. Others say let's accelerate tax cuts. Where do you see this shaking out? Out in your eyes?
From a strategic perspective, I'm very supportive of the idea of, you know, maybe every few years, every decade, evaluate our tax system and look at the efficiencies of the system, and ask the question whether or not it's advancing and improving the quality of life for Hoosiers. The concern that I have with expediting the tax cuts, I'm very supportive of improving the quality of life for Hoosiers. But we currently have a regressive tax system, meaning that the lower income strata of our society here in Indiana, they get taxed more than the upper strata. And to me, that's a concern. That's a regressive system that basically pushes the people who are trying to lift themselves up more than those who are middle to higher income families.
Time flies when you're having a good conversation. I warned you it would fly by. So many topics left to talk about. We don't have the purview to have a special session on this discussion. Otherwise, I'd say let's go into it right now. Thank you all for being here for this.
I appreciate your
interest and your passion. We'll be watching over the next few weeks. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Jeff Thompson of Lisdon, Democratic Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, Republican Senator Chris Garten of Charlestown, and Democratic Senator Fatih Khedira of Indianapolis. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. So, Ed, is April 19th circled in red ink with stars around it?
Absolutely. We've been talking about that in caucus, as the leaders would say.
Every controversial issue is being discussed in caucus, right? So, I mean, that is the high stakes day.
Sure. You've got to find out how much money you've got to play with, basically. And what we're looking at with the new forecast is probably not a whole lot of change from the most recent one in December. We're looking at just modest change. Then you look at the factors that go into it. Are we going into a recession? Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal keeps saying, oh, 6 months from now we're going to be in recession. Well, they've been saying that for however long. And, you know, we've pushed back the recession forecast from the last fiscal forecast. What about employment? Employment numbers are good. Inflation, well, we're still experiencing some high inflation. Interest rates, well, we don't quite know what's going to happen with those because
of the banking crisis. Too, yeah. You know, you get that.
So, see, if you've got all kinds of different factors going into it. But I think you're just going to be looking at a little bit of plus minus, a little bit of deviation from what we saw in December. And the numbers have been coming in good in each month's revenue collection since then.
Huge,
so
yeah.
That's
February,
positive
up 11%
news.
Or something. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting, though, when you talk about how things have changed and people have been saying this and it hadn't materialized, that people may not trust the forecast? I mean, ostensibly it's a bipartisan effort, but are you saying people might pick and choose what they want to hear?
Well, it certainly is bipartisan in terms of what you do with respect to taking the forecast and then plugging in the numbers. But the big question is how reliant upon that economic forecast, the independent economic forecast, will legislators be? Before the big global fiscal crisis in 2008-09, there was a lot of real attention given to that, and legislators essentially said, yeah, we trust it. Since then, they've been a little bit more cautious. And I think the interesting thing to watch this year is to what extent this new group will say, okay, we're a little bit skeptical about this, or we're a little bit more optimistic, and where they go from there.
And are all the cards on the table? I mean, sometimes you and I have been around long enough to know some things sneak into the final conference committee negotiations. Do you think everybody's put their cards on the table?
Well, I think that we have that fiscally. I'm still wondering whether there might be something, some stray policy issue that might just find its way into like the last line or two this year.
That's more fun than the money side anyway, right? Ed, as always, appreciate your insight.
Thank you, John.
The governor just signed a bill barring gender-affirming care for minors. Other bills target transgender issues related to schools and prisons. We'll continue the discussion on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Until next week, take care.